Hello, HR professionals. Good news. This episode of the Cool Leaf podcast is valid for 0.5 professional development credits towards SHRM CP, SHRM SCP, and HRCI recertification. Stay tuned to access your certification code.
Welcome to The Great Retention, a show spotlighting executive leaders who are building award-winning cultures where people feel empowered, seen, and recognized. I'm your host, John Duesberg, and I co-founded my own company and this podcast with the simple idea that life is short, so why not love the people with whom you work? We have a passion for helping people-first leaders like you connect individuals and teams inside of your organization to create stronger workplace communities and cultures. So whether you're leading a small business or a large enterprise, fully distributed or in the office, welcome to our community here at The Great Retention. Today, I sit down with Seth Bartholomew, the head of employee experience at Chronosphere. Seth brings such a great perspective to our conversation, not only based on the work that he's leading with his team at Chronosphere, but also all of the experience at organizations that he's had that you may know about, such as Disney Streaming, Uber, and Hulu. So if you are a leader managing a remote or hybrid team, today is going to be especially valuable for you. So make sure to tune in because we're going to be diving right into how Seth and his team have implemented an actual playbook for a remote first onboarding for employees, which is all centered around their core values and how they make people feel welcome, even though they are remote. Huge topic, huge challenge for many, many leaders and organizations out there. So we are very excited for this conversation. And we're also gonna dive into how Seth and his team speaks to ROI when it comes to their employee engagement strategy and how they use data to reflect the value and the results that they've been able to achieve. Looking forward to this great conversation with Seth. All right. Welcome to another episode of The Great Retention. Seth, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Glad to be here. Thanks, John.
Yeah, awesome. Well, looking forward to diving in all things employee experience. I know that you have a lot of background in this space. And to kick us off, right? So, you know, for our audience, people first leaders, whether this is a CEO, CHRO, everything in between, wanting to, you know, elevate, you know, how we approach employee experience, engagement, retention, all of these topics, right, as we're heading into a new year. So, but give us context. Would love to learn just a little bit about your leadership role, the work that you're doing, but also Chronosphere as an organization. Tell us a little bit about what that looks like for our audience.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I'm the head of employee experience for Chronosphere. Chronosphere is a cloud native data observability platform. We are a little under 300 employees at the moment, spread across the globe. So we have employees across the U.S., we have employees in Canada, all across Europe, and then actually some team members in Australia now. We have three hub offices, which are in New York, Seattle, and Vilnius, Lithuania. But for the most part, all of our employees are remote. So we really define ourselves as a remote first company, meaning the default mode of working for most of our team members is going to be remote in some capacity. But, you know, like I said, we have hub offices and we do offer co-working memberships because we really value that flexibility for employees and being able to choose where they work best.
Got it. Okay. So global employee footprint, a little under 300 employees, remote first. And leading employee experience for Chronosphere. So, yeah, appreciate that context. So for a global company that is remote first, tell us a little bit about the culture at Chronosphere and tell us, you know, what does this mean to you as a leader, but also, you know, what does that look like at Chronosphere?
Yeah, and let me actually back up and give a little bit of context about my role and what we oversee. So employee experience has become a sort of wide umbrella for a lot of different things. And I think depending on the company or the person, it's probably going to have some different functions that fall in there. So specifically for Chronosphere, you know, my team's responsible for remote experience, in-place experience, engagement. So we run all of our engagement surveys, internal communication. So that the all hands, our company, you know, our intranet, our wiki, and then building out the playbooks that support those things and give people, you know, sort of an idea of the best practices. So that's really, you know, along with DEI and employee resource groups, those are all the things that my team sort of is responsible for and supporting and managing. As far as culture at Chronosphere, you know, it's really interesting because when I was in the process of looking for a new role, what really drew me to Chronosphere was, one, I thought they had a very progressive, at the time, very progressive outlook on remote first, right? The past few years have kind of, just from the data I've gleaned and from a lot of the work I've done, I sort of formed the thought in my head that I think remote is going to be, it's going to grow in the future. And I do think this will, at least hybrid will be the default mode of working for most organizations going forward in the future. I don't see us returning to a 5-day week workplace. And so I wanted to be part of an organization that prioritized that. The fact that they were even at their size thinking about this role showed me that they valued employee experience and engagement. And that's something they wanted to, they had a great culture in place, but that was something they were very cognizant about keeping as they scaled and as they grew. And so when I started that, the first thing I noticed was it was a very welcoming, inviting environment, right? I started virtually like most of our employees do, went through onboarding and, it's always funny to me, like when you start a role in person, I think it's really easy to build those relationships. You're meeting with people in person. You're typically, most of the people you work with are going to be in the same office. This wasn't the case. But it never I never felt disconnected from the first moment. I think the people team, which is the team I'm under, and just the wider organization was very good about reaching out and setting up time. And it was a very sort of welcoming environment. And the one thing, it was a very values driven culture. And I'll get into values and a lot of the work we did in that in a bit. But I think those are the things that really drew me to the company. Was just from my own philosophy and the things that I believe very strongly in, and it aligned with a lot of the things that they were doing already. So,
yeah, no, that's, I would say most leaders I talk to, like max 3 days a week.
Yeah.
When it comes in terms of coming in the office. Right. And so, I'd say hybrid, definitely seeing that more and more, but a lot of companies, especially in tech, because we, there's efficiencies, but I know even for our team, when we do bring everyone together, that's some of the best feedback we get. So there is still that need for connection,
Absolutely.
That need to create, authentic relationships, right? And so one of the things you said that I want to dig into a little bit further is you said, even though it was a remote first environment, you felt this like genuine welcoming, right? So talk to us, because I feel like this is something that just a lot of organizations, leaders, it's just a struggle, right? It's just a challenge, to be totally honest, right? So tell us a little bit about that. What does that look like? How have you guys approached that? Any kind of examples or things that you can share when it comes to how do you create that welcoming environment in a remote first setting?
Yeah, I think the first is being very thoughtful and intentional about the onboarding and how you're onboarding people. And so even just in my onboarding cohort, where I didn't have anybody from my own team, just getting to know people and, the emphasis on setting up time with people outside of that. And they were very intentional and cognizant of, look, we are remote. So it is about setting up time with people as much as possible, getting to know people. We also do, we are remote first, but we do a pretty regular cadence of offsite. So we bring teams together. And like you said, I think you stated it well, there are benefits to being remote, right? You get the flexibility, you get the choice. And I think it's good for, for parents and for, I think it's good from a diversity standpoint. We're tapping into talent markets that maybe tech wasn't really looking at previously. But that being said, it's very hard to replicate that in-person connection when you bring people together, when you get people in a room, when you're able to brainstorm and just bounce ideas of each other. It's very hard to do that consistently in a virtual setting. And so I think for us, it's about, we found a good balance in giving people that choice. So we've got options for them. They can go to the office, they can go to co-working space, they can work remotely. But we're also very cognizant about bringing teams together. And when we do bring teams together, maximizing the time we get together. So being very intentional and thoughtful. And then we do a regular cadence of just social events, just getting teams together on a local scale. So whether it's in New York, whether it's Seattle, San Francisco, Boston, where we have these pockets of employees, the sort of, we're seeing a larger number of populations of employees in those cities. We want to bring them together on a regular basis just for social interaction, just to get people together. Yeah. So, I've said for the past couple of years, I think remote, hybrid, in-person, all of this is going to be messy for the next few years. But I think the companies that are tackling this problem now are going to have the most success. And I think the companies that are heavily resistant to any mode that isn't 5 days a week in office, I think they're going to have some challenges with it when it comes to retaining talent and acquiring talent.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. So with the role of employee experience at Chronosphere, I mean, are you guys love the idea of like regional gatherings, right? Yeah. Hey, I've got 10 folks here, you know, and it's like, is that something that you facilitate as an employee experience leader, or is that like you're empowering them to do that? Like how, like, I know that's a tactical question, but
No. That's a great point. And it is, it's part of the, you know, the overall program we built. Like we don't want to be the gatekeepers of people getting together, right? So it is about empowering employees, but like we are that sort of connector to it, right? Where if, you know, we own the budget for that kind of thing. And so we're working with local team members. So we're not just deciding in a vacuum, like, hey, we're going to have everybody go to here on this day. We're working with our stakeholders in those cities to say, well, we're pulsing people. What do you think would be a good event? Like, what are you guys interested in doing? So again, we don't want to be the gatekeepers or blockers to that, but there's got to be an overarching program of it. It can't just be sort of a free-for-all because, you know, you've got budgets and costs and things like that you got to consider. But that's sort of the model we adopted, where we want to give them the tools to support. You know, it's very similar to the way we've built our employee resource group program. We want to give people the tools and support and the structure. But like, you know, it's I think part of the amazing thing about the culture at Chronosphere is it is a homegrown culture, and we want employees to retain that.
Right. It has to be organic.
Yes.
It can't. So totally get that. But I think it's worth noting that there's a budget that's been allocated, right?
Yeah.
For this specifically, right? And then there's pulsing. So you're actually, you know, it sounds like at some sequence, gathering feedback in terms of, you know, how people want to stay, you know, connected and so forth. And then there's a budget to do that. So there is some intentional thought that has gone into, hey, we're going to make this an important part of our culture, right?
Definitely. And I think it goes back to, you know, I see this with when I talk to peers at other companies, where like the whole, when you go to remote or hybrid model, you know, typically they're thinking very much about like bringing two people together for work related. So off, or I guess on sites would be the word, but bringing people together to connect around work. And I think one thing that gets lost in that is a big part of culture building that I've seen, and this is even pre-pandemic in the office, they're just those sort of like spur of the moment. Hey, let's all go out tonight. Let's go grab lunch, or let's go out and eat. Like that's a big part of building bonds and relationship with people. So you have to me, you've got to find a way, whether it's remote or not, to give opportunity to have those social moments, those social connections be created.
Totally agree. And you know, you mentioned during your onboarding, there's an emphasis on just spending time with folks. I may be more willing to just do those spontaneous, you know, whatever interactions if I've met you before. So onboarding is another challenge area that I hear very frequently, especially in a remote first environment. How have you guys approached this? It sounds like, very intentional meeting people, creating, a schedule of how you're going to be introduced maybe to different departments, different roles. And so tell us a little bit how you guys have approached onboarding.
Yeah. So one thing we do, and I think you'll see this a lot with smaller tech companies, and I've done this previously, is we have what's called donuts, which are these little, you're familiar. Yeah. So it pops up in Slack. I love that, because whenever I start a company, that's a great way just to get to know people, to put random time on people's calendars. You know, it's very easy in a remote environment to get sort of siloed in terms of that connection with just your team, right? Because you know, by default, you're going to be having a lot of calls with your team. You're going to be getting to learn them. You're going to, you know, get to know your immediate stakeholders and the partners. But there's this wider part of the company that you may not have those work touch points with. And to me, like things like donuts are a great way to get to know people that you don't have a consistent touch point with. But beyond that, you know, I think it's being in a virtual environment, you know, it doesn't mean you're necessarily isolated. And so I think you've got your onboarding cohort you start with, and really to me, the best part, you know, the most important part of onboarding is those first couple of days and getting people immersed in the culture, learning the values, learning the sort of broad things that affect the company, you know, that are sort of across the company. And then you kind of dive more into the things that are specific to your role and your team. But, you know, just being able to set up time with people. And that's one of the things I emphasize with team members is like, reach out to people, set up time, throw time on the calendars. We all have each other's Google calendar. Like, there's no reason you can't do that. I mean, obviously you want to be cognizant of time zones and we're across distributed time zones, but you know, I think it's just about encouraging people and letting them know, hey, this is part of the culture, meeting people, reaching out to people. And then conversely, encouraging team members to always welcome the new team members. And that, like, we are, you know, putting it on Slack when somebody starts and everybody's kind of, it's those little sort of things that I think go a long way with welcoming people.
Got it. And so, you know, it sounds like you and I know a lot of other tech companies, you know, heavy Slack shop, right? And
yes.
Donut's an app that basically pairs,
yep.
I guess, random
yeah.
you know, folks together to spend whatever, 15, 20 minutes, just getting to know one another. And so this is something that's just part of the, like, all employees are part of yeah. this. It sounds like.
Exactly. It's not mandatory. You know what I mean? When you start, you're put into it and you can obviously opt out of it. But yeah, it is something every, you know, when you start that is available.
Okay. Very cool. Very cool. Love the idea of just, you know, just connecting people outside of their own, you know, department
yeah.
and kind of, you know, just work zone. So totally makes sense. So, okay. So, you know, the other, you know, question, that I wanted to, you know, really kind of get your feedback on here, Seth, is, so when it comes to employee, you know, we, you know, 2023, especially in tech, it's been a tough environment for a lot of companies, right? Sure. So we've gone through layoffs, there's been, you know, budget freezes, you name it, right? Macro yeah. conditions. And the knee-jerk reaction can be, hey, like, we're going to pull back. Employee yeah. experience sounds great when times are well, but right now we got to focus on X, right? Like that's maybe, you know, what someone who doesn't understand the value or the ROI of employee experience. So talk to me, and I'm kind of teeing this up because I know Chronosphere is a very, you know, data oriented company, but talk yeah. to me about how you show the value for employee experience within the organization. How do you, you know, make this a data driven strategy, you know, as you guys are moving forward. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. We are, we're not overly heavy with surveys, but we do a lot of surveys. We do a biannual cadence of a larger engagement survey, and then we'll do pulse surveys, which are typically targeted for specific initiatives, or if we want to get, you know, data around a certain topic, that kind of thing. And then we do an annual benefits survey as well, where we dive deep into the benefits. But what I always like to remind people is, you know, we talk about Maslow's hierarchy, right? And how Maslow's hierarchy affects employee experience. When you think about that, right, there's, it's really easy to look at employee experience in terms of like those perks and those bells and whistles and the events and all of that stuff. But there's actually things that I think are more important to that if you're not tackling those and you're not solving for those, it doesn't matter how much you're going to have on the perk side or the event side. And, you know, those are things like do people feel like they're fairly compensated? Do people feel like they have agency and choice at work? Autonomy? Do they feel like they have a good relationship with their manager and their peers, and they've got two-way communication with their managers? So, you know, I think to me, employee experience doesn't have to suffer because of budget constraints, right? Like there's things that factor into creating employee engagement, creating employee satisfaction, which aren't necessarily budget driven. And I think that's where the survey comes into play, right? So we, you know, we've done a good job of sort of templatizing our engagement survey statements that are pretty standard, right? And those are things that are centered around your relationship with your manager. Are you getting regular feedback? Do you feel like your job performance is evaluated fairly? Do you feel like people from all backgrounds are treated fairly? So we have questions around DEI. So we have that sort of templatized statements where we can look at comparison data between the engagement surveys. But then we'll also add questions to those around things that we're just, you know, we're looking to explore a little bit more closely for that go around. So for example, this previous one we did in the fall, we wanted to dive in a little bit deeper on our meeting culture and all hands. And do people think we have a good, you know, an appropriate cadence and frequency of all hands? Do they feel like they're getting useful information from that? Do they feel like they're having an appropriate cadence of departmental meetings? Do they feel like they get the updates they need when they need them? Because to me, communication is a big thing. And I've seen this at other companies where if the communication's lacking, if people feel like their time's being wasted, that's going to adversely affect engagement more than, you know, not having large events or social, you know what I mean? Like those are the right things that are going to frustrate people and really create, you know, poor engagement. So I think we've done a good job of that and creating that sort of standard for what the statements are in the engagement, but then also looking at things from H1 to H2 in terms of like, what are some areas we need to dive into deeper?
Yeah. And I love what you said about Maslow's hierarchy. It's such a, I think, you know, taking a step back, it's like, like you said, the fundamentals, right, have to be in place in order for you to build on, in order for you to get value out of some of the, we'll call it higher end, you know, you know, perks or whatever they might be. And so the way that you are, I guess, ensuring that fundamentals are in place is you're using that pulse, right? And so in addition to the cadence of engagement, feedback, you're mixing in, you know, I guess different questions based on any initiatives that you might be focusing on the upcoming quarter, what have you. Makes a ton of sense. Totally, you know, totally on the same page. So I appreciate you sharing that insight. You know, I haven't heard it in that way, but I totally get it. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So on this note of remote first, of kind of welcoming onboarding, of making sure that, you know, the fundamentals are in place. I know previously we talked about a remote first playbook, right? So an actual playbook that you give to people. Yeah. So like, tell me what this is. I don't, help me understand. Like, you're giving me a guide, a manual. What are you giving me? Tell me about
this. No, it's a great question. This has sort of evolved over time. This is kind of when I started, one of the first things I talked about with our head of people, in terms of a project that I think, so, you know, it, throughout the pandemic, we heard all these new phrases, remote first, hybrid, all of these things, right? And I think they mean something different for each company because it's the way the company defines their policies around those things. Mm. For us, you know, we're very clear about remote first means remote is our default mode of working. So most of our employees will be remote, but we wanted to go beyond that, right? So we wanted to dive into like a little bit deeper on what our philosophy on remote is. What are the supporting pillars? And so we came up with four sort of philosophical pillars for how we operationalize or think of remote work. And that's flexibility, right? We want to give employees choice. We want to give them agency, autonomy, the ability to choose how, where they work best. Clear and consistent communication. We're remote. We're not in person. We're spread across time zones. Communication is crucial to us to keep people aligned. And not just communication, but leveraging asynchronous communication, right? We're not all in the same time zones. We don't want people to have to, we don't want work-life balance to suffer. We want to be very cognizant of that. So how can we leverage these million and one tools for asynchronous communication in a way that's going to keep people aligned? Support and enablement. So it's not just enough to let people work flexibly remotely. You got to give them the tools to do that properly. So if they're at home, they need a home setup, right? If there's somebody who just doesn't work well at home, you know, I saw this at previously my old company. New York is one of those markets where most people live in smaller offices, right? Or smaller apartments. Going to the office is going to be a much better way of working. So support enablement pillar is really around giving people the tools for that. And then it's the fourth pillar is that connection piece, connection and camaraderie. So finding those moments, whether virtually in person, to bring people together and create that connection, that culture. And so that's kind of the first thing we started with when we're building this playbook. So we just wanted to outline what our philosophy was, what those pillars were. And then from there, we started building out just best practices from everything from around how to maintain work-life balance, how to create these sort of guardrails around your day where you're not just constantly working and you've got that work-life harmony, to best practices for managers, advice for managers, how to remote, you know, to manage a team remotely and virtually for, you know, performance issues, things like that. So it's kind of evolved over time to this sort of all-encompassing guide of how we, not only philosophically, how we view remote work and why it's important, but also how to operationalize that and give people those best practices. And originally, my intention around it was for new hires, right? Because I thought this is going to be a great way to introduce new people to this culture. Not everybody's been in a remote first environment, especially, you know, a year ago or a little over a year ago when I started here. These concepts are still a little bit new. So we wanted it for new hires. And then it's, as I'm building it, I'm like, no, I think there's a lot here that actually apply to managers as well and helping managers manage their teams virtually and remotely. And then even, you know, I've worked with some of our TA team just in terms of like being able to give snippets of that to candidates so they know what they're getting into when they are going to a remote first company. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I literally just last month finished. So now we're incorporating, we have the playbook, but we're actually built a course around it for onboarding. So employees can go take this course via their onboarding path. And they can learn all of these, you know, these tips, guides, best practices, philosophical points around remote working. That was long-winded. I apologize.
No, it's great. Now I want to, you know, so like, I'm going to put my more traditional hat on.
Yeah.
Do I think of this as an employee handbook or is it something different? Right.
Yeah, definitely different. Cause we have an employee handbook, and to me, employee handbook is more around, you know, the policies, really understanding the policies from an HR standpoint and just the things that affect kind of every employee. This is geared specifically towards remote working and how we view it, how we think about it, how to operationalize it essentially.
Yeah. Love that you guys, you know, have invested in this, and how this translates through onboarding, you know, all the way to manager training. And, you know, a lot of people have never managed before, you know, a team, let alone remote.
Yeah.
Right. And so, I totally get it. Right. And it makes a lot of sense. You know, tip of the hat, you know, to you and the team at Chronosphere for putting that in place, you know, to help employees make this, you know, transition into the organization. So love that. Seth, this has been awesome. Really appreciate you just coming on the show, just being an open book, sharing your experiences. One of the ways that we like to always wrap up is just to get a lesson learned or a key takeaway or something that we can share with our audience that they can maybe just go in and you know and just you know implement inside of their team or their organization. So I know you mentioned about Maslow's hierarchy, but what tell us, is there anything that kind of comes to mind as we wrap up here today that you can share as a takeaway?
You know, I think, and this is just because this has been, I've been so close to this for the past few years now, and I've seen this done. You know, what I'll say is the best thing I could call out right now for leaders is around whatever their policy is going to be around remote working, hybrid, in person. You know, I think the most important thing is figuring out first what is necessary and important to your company to run your actual business. Then using the, you know, looking at the data from employees, what are employees asking for? And whatever you decide, wherever you land, be very resolute in what that is, because we've seen this a lot with companies where they'll come out with a policy, they backtrack, and then that eventually just sort of weakens their stance in their employee eyes. So be very resolute in what it is and ensure that you're backing it up with data, and you're being very intentional and thoughtful about how you implement that. Because I think one thing it's easy to forget in this conversation of remote versus in-person is hybrid, is how much this affects people's lives and how much this affects employees' lives. And, you know, I think that's the most important thing, is you've just got to be very, you know, you're going to be honed in on what your data is telling you and why you made that decision. It can't just be decided in a vacuum, like, I think everybody should be back in the office, or I think everybody should be remote. There's got to be concrete data to back up that stance.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I know that we feel that alignment. If we can positively impact, you know, the lives of people, employees' lives, that's going to impact the business to be successful. Yeah. So, Seth, thank you again for joining us on The Great Retention. So much respect for you, you know, the Chronosphere as an organization and the work that you're doing, and just really appreciate you sharing your insights with us today.
No, absolutely, John. It was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That wraps up another edition of The Great Retention. Thank you for joining us and being a leader who genuinely cares about recognizing and empowering the everyday hero in the team members around you. We are proud to support your leadership journey and grateful for your support of this podcast. If you haven't already, please rate the show on Apple Podcasts and share it with a friend. This helps us get this content in front of more aspiring people-first business leaders. If you'd like more perspectives on how to create exceptional cultures around award-winning talent, go to coolleaf.com and sign up for our newsletter to get them straight into your inbox 2 times per month. This podcast wouldn't be possible without the help from our production team at Chat with Leaders Media. Learn how you can launch your own podcast to grow your business at chatwithleaders.com. Thanks again for listening. Now go be people first leaders by celebrating and connecting your people today.
HR professionals, thanks for listening. As promised, this episode of the Cool Leaf podcast is valid for 0.5 professional development credits towards SHRM CP, SHRM SCP, and HRCI recertification. To claim your SHRM credit, please visit www.coolleaf.com/podcast/SHRM. To claim your HRCI credit, please visit www.coolleaf.com/podcast/HRCI. Complete the 3-question form to receive your certification code. That's coolleaf.com/podcast/SHRM and coolleaf.com/podcast/HRCI.